sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A decision on Syria is moving markets. China and Europe manufacturing shows a surprise to the upside. And we have live webinars coming your way. All this and much more on episode number 328 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and happy Labor Day to you. We're a day late, not a dollar short, though, I guarantee that. This is Andrew Horowitz. And yeah, we do usually publish a episode every about Sunday night. We thought because it was a holiday, the end of summer, oh boo-hoo, and the beginning of the new school year, as well as the beginning of the new trading season, because now we do have that traders are back. Remember that. Traders have been off for a while. They're back, and they're going to be looking to move markets one way or the other. And we have a variety of things happening this week that could very well be significant in terms of the way markets react. Of course, over the weekend, we did hear that there was an indecision, an inability for President Obama to do anything about that red line that he so eloquently provided us a vivid image on, that if there was chemical warfare used, that it would be that red line that we would have to get involved somehow. And it would be something that would be rather, well, very quick. Unfortunately, we saw things break down in terms of the ability for this administration to come up with any kind of decision on what to do. Essentially, just kind of backtrack a little bit. Last week, the markets really were in a very upset mode due to a lot of things. But really, what was being focused on was the fact that we may have some kind of a military strike or occupation or response to the fact that, hey, they're using chemical warfare on their citizens, and that is just not something that is tolerated. And we did see that, of course, a report came back, and it was told to us by John Kerry, that sarin gas was found in the hair follicles of people that were in Syria, and that was confirmation in itself. Well, right before that, the UK had a vote, and it was a vote to not actually do anything at this point and leave it to the UN to come up with their decision before they make a decision on what they're going to do. Well, that left everything to the US, which is usually the case, and the US then was going to, you know, it looked like there was going to be some kind of an imminent strike. We saw warships on the way, and we saw that there was plans being made, but Friday, it seemed that there was a surprise made to even the people in the closest of the administration, and that was that, hey, you know what, we're not going to do anything. We're going to hand this off to Congress. Let Congress make a decision on this. And without talking about the politics behind this and going into all of that discussion, it really did show a little bit of weakness on the part of the U.S. to do anything. Now, the last thing what we want to do is have a war for 100,000 million, you know, quadrillion reasons. We do not want to go into another situation where we are going to be in any way have ground troops that are going to be potentially in the area that are going to be trying to stop what's going on and cause harm to any particular military person from the U.S. or anywhere else around the world that is participating. We really don't want to have even anything to do with this at all, but the fact of the matter is that something has to be done. Well, this kind of shifted the power back to Syria and the regime that's currently in power there, because they may be thinking that, hey, you know what? There's nobody that's going to do anything about this. There's no teeth into what they say. And that's a problem not only for Syria, but for some of the other areas around the world that have a dictator that is looking to really impose their will on their people in a pretty negative way. At the end of the day, we'll see what happens. It's not over. Listen, this is not over. The fact is that I guarantee you that President Obama and the Congress are not going to put up with any kind of shenanigans and any kind of massive amount of overpowering of the citizens of any country. We're seeing about, I think, 110,000 lives were lost already in this conflict. And if it is done so on a scale with chemical warfare or any other kind of, massive extermination, I don't think that's going to fly very well with anybody in the U.S. or the U.N. How long is the big question? How long is it going to take for response to happen? How many more lives will have to be lost? That is the big issue that we're really dealing with right now and grappling with. And we did see that there was a pretty substantial reaction to this because futures markets around the world rallied significantly due to this postponement. Now, there's other things, too. We did see that China had another manufacturing gauge pop up above the 50 mark, which is that demarcation level of whether it's in contraction an economy or whether an economy is in expansion. And over 50 is good because they had been in contraction for such a long time, and this is a good sign. We also saw that the Eurozone had one of the best readings they had since 2011 in terms of manufacturing. Those things coupled together with the fact that we saw such a really rough month last month, and the fact that now we have the potential for not having a conflict that would be detrimental and inclusive of other parties outside of just Syria and keeping it contained to their countrymen, really did show that show investors that, hey, maybe this is a good time to get in. Even though we did see markets were closed for Labor Day in the U.S., the futures were open overnight on Sunday and into Monday partially, and we saw about a 15 or 16-point move on the S&P 500, about 35 points on the NASDAQ, about 110 points on the Dow Jones futures. And the Eurozone was up on average for the Euro Stock 50, about 2% or so. And Germany, France, Spain, Italy, all up about 1.5 to 2%. And we saw Japan as well move higher. Interestingly, we also saw gold, play a little bit of an interesting move. We saw it move down, which it probably should in response, and then pop up a little bit. Silver climbed by about 2%. Copper climbed by about 2% on the China and the European numbers. And I thought what was most interesting was that oil, while it did come off a bit, because, of course, oil has been climbing significantly over the last several weeks, and particularly in the last move up when we saw that there was the potential for some kind of additional move on Syria and the problem with the oil when it comes to the Middle East and who knows what is going to go on there. And it didn't back off as much as I would think it should. Yes, it hit 112 last week, 112 on WTI. Backed off to about 107 or so. But really, if there is not going to be a conflict of any sort, you have to wonder why it's still at these levels. Now, you could say maybe it's because the manufacturing numbers were better and there's a hope that there's going to be a continuation of expansion of the global economy. And that would, of course, lead to a higher consumption of oil and gasoline, et cetera. And all right, so we can go there. But at the end of the day, it still seems a bit overpriced. Well, last month was one of the worst months for the U.S. markets on equities in about a year and a half. As a matter of fact, we saw around the world some of the worst performance of equities. And we also saw that the returns on bonds were terrible as well. It was one of those months that there was just a real concern, and it was clear that it was a move towards safety as people were selling things and not redeploying. Investors, on average, were not redeploying their money into anything but cash. Yeah, we did see a bit of a move up on gold from that fear trade, so that seemed a bit more normalized, which is good to see. It's nice to see some more normalized movement of money in response to particular news items or events that come up. Because for so long, we've been seeing things like, when there is bad news, the markets move up. And when there's good news, markets move down, particularly in the U.S. that is so focused on the Fed. But now that we have the China's PMI moving up last month, as the governments have really try to slow down some of their they've been clamping down for some time now. They've been really, really saying, hey, you know what? We have to watch for inflation. We have to watch for the housing bubble that we see. Banks, their reserve ratios are problematic. We really want to slow this down. And as such, they did, to a point that it started going in reverse, at least from the information that we see. How much of the information can we really believe? Well, I don't know that answer. But all I can tell you is that if we look into it too much, we may miss the opportunity here. Does China become a buy at this point? Questionable. Does India become a buy? Have you seen the chart on India's stock market lately? Ooh, absolutely atrocious. Interesting place now that all of a sudden the government is intervening on the rupee. Now what happens? Now does all of a sudden the dynamic change in India? And I would say that that is something I would look into. You can look into the ETFs that are, there's a couple of them out there. IFN is one of the symbols on the ETF that you can invest in for India. And there's a couple others, but basically you want to look at this as the government now has finally reached a point that they're realizing that, you know what, this drop that they've seen, this incredible move on the rupee that has been significantly affecting their markets may in fact need to be contained by government, not by just the markets. And as such, it could be a place that if we do see some stabilization, the potential for the markets to really reverse course here and move higher is very interesting. And I would take a look at that as something that if we could find the stabilization point, that's something that we want to, you know, really look at. Now, I'll tell you something else, that on Friday, the move that we saw on the continued downtrend, even though there was a couple of decent days on the week, the end of the week panic, even though it was orderly, and you'll hear it was orderly and it was okay, it was very much ahead of a long weekend. The VIX kept on popping higher. We saw that the small caps got slammed pretty well. We saw that in general, there was a sell-off, but still it was a relatively lower volume sell-off into a long weekend of unknowns. And now that we have some more clarity, I would think that unless there is significant news to the contrary, which I don't think that there's going to be a massive congressional action to move on Syria very quickly, unless we find that there is additional atrocities or continuation of a similar trend in Syria, I don't think that we're going to see a lot of action by Congress. And that being the case, what you're going to find is the reaction to the China numbers and the European numbers is going to be pretty solid. The only thing that we really have to pay attention to is going to be this week's economic numbers in the U.S., which is a pretty heavy calendar. Let's start off with the fact that we know that at the end of the week, let's kind of work to the end and then backwards a bit, we have the big number, which is the unemployment rate. Now, we're looking for somewhere around a 7.5% overall unemployment rate. And that would be, you know, in the unchanged area from the previous month. That's still pretty good. Is it going to be the number that is going to break the back of the Fed in terms of how much they're going to be depositing or buying of bonds? There's been a lot of talk about this tapering. There's a lot of talk from many of the members that, you know, the economy is at a point where the potential for a slowing of the buying of these bonds could really take place. And I, for one, don't see why we have to keep on, you know, purchasing bonds at this level, considering the fact of how far we've come economically. You know, we do see that there is hiring coming on. We do see that the unemployment rate has dropped a bit. We do see, generally speaking, that companies have done much better and are doing much better, and earnings have been, you know, holding up and all. Is there ever going to be a time that we can actually survive as an economy, as a vital and vibrant economy, without the Fed? I mean, what they're telegraphing here is that there is no way that they really could find a way to back out of this. Is it merely that we want to, you know, have a legacy for Bernanke when he leaves, that, well, this is what happened and we kept on doing it until sometime in the future and he could keep his overall commitment to reviving the economy in the face of this impending depression that was out there. And is that what's going on? I mean, it seems to be contradictory in terms of what's actually happening with the economy and the amount of money that is being utilized to continually try to revive it. And questionably, why does it need to have this much money at this point? But anyway, we have this jobs number coming out at the end of the week, and we're looking for about plus 180,000 on the change in non-farm payrolls, about the same for private payrolls. Now, going, again, reverse order here, we're seeing that the ADP is looking for about 185,000, which is about what it was, close enough. Last month it was about 200, so a little bit less than last month is the anticipated number. But still, there is the overall feeling that, you know, jobs are still growing and doing better. Now, when it comes to things like construction spending, now we've seen some weakening in the housing data recently that has been concerning to many, and it could be for a lot of different reasons. One of the major issues that has been brought up clearly is that interest rates have been rising, and there was a stampede into buying new homes and getting mortgages and getting the thing done before there was any increase in the rate, and that really front-loaded the last several months up until the most recent, where we saw that new home sales basically plunged down 13%, and that really took a little bit of the sparkle off the home market in terms of new homes, and even existing home sales were weaker than it was expected. So this is going to be one of those times that we question whether or not the economy is shifting into a different segment. We've seen some manufacturing slowdown. Well, we'll see the ISM manufacturing on the 3rd. Expectations are for about a 54.0 when the prior is about 55.4. But prices paid had been dropping, and that's been good. So you have the manufacturers, while they're really not manufacturing as much and the demand isn't there, you still see that the prices are dropping. So therefore, margins will still hold up somewhat well. We have the Beige Book coming out on the 4th. Domestic vehicle sales looking about 12.3 million on a domestic basis, on an annualized basis, and on total vehicle sales, about 15.8 million. Both of those numbers are better than would be over the last several months and actually moving in the right direction. Factory orders are expected to drop on the 5th to about 3.5% down, which would probably be about right because a one-month lag on that, so that's the July orders. Then we have the non-manufacturing coming out, looking at 55. Now, remember something, that this has been, these numbers, the ISM manufacturing and the ISM non-manufacturing, or the service index, they have been looked at very differently than you would expect because, again, these are the bad is good is bad numbers. So I would watch those numbers and see what the reaction to those is going to be. But then you have, like I said, the major issue is going to be at the end of the week when really set the stage for what's going to happen at the next meeting. If you do see a really good employment number in terms of the unemployment rate, I would expect this. So let's say that the unemployment number comes in at 7.4, 7.3, 7.2, you know, whatever the reason is. I would expect the Fed speakers to come out and start talking about how that they have a set number of 6.5 that they put in for some time ago, right? 6.5 was the number that they said would be, you know, when they start to scale back 2% inflation, 6.5% unemployment rate. I would expect them to backtrack on that. And I expect them to say something like that they want to be flexible. Dependent on the overall economic numbers will be the determining factor of what they do. Okay. So what we have now is a situation where they're going to create, again, the basic carrot and stick and continually put that carrot out there because they want to make sure that everybody knows that in the event that things go sour, somehow, some reason, some way, whether it's like a situation like Syria, whether it's just an economic event, whatever it may be, that they're going to be there so that they can hold the markets up. Remember, the Fed these days is very focused on equity markets because they want to make sure that the wealth effect is consistently growing in a way that they can use that as an economic stimulus factor. That's a big part of what they're doing. Now, if the if the unemployment rate comes out to the negative, well, they don't have to say anything, because if we see a 7.7% or some crazy number that is an increase in the unemployment rate, well, you're going to see that the gold will probably spike and stocks will probably move up and bonds will be moving up, but also the rates, of course, will move down, because you're going to find that most people then believe that stimulus will stay in force for a much longer period of time. So up is down is up, unless up is up and down is down. Hopefully that explains exactly what's going on from an economic standpoint. As we did see that the earnings season is pretty much coming to an end, and we saw again a very mixed set of numbers coming out of the various sectors, and the front end was really good. The back end was probably, I would consider, really bad comparatively. Well, then you're going to have to think about what is the next play going to be, and how are people going to be setting up for the next earnings season. We're right in the middle of it now, kind of towards the end of the earnings and the quiet period, if you will, or at least the lull between now and the next time that earnings come out. And that often is a time of volatility and often a time of questioning where the next move is going to happen and what the catalyst will be for the market. And will the market catalyst be positive or negative? Now, you combine that with the fact that there's a lot of question about what's happening with the Fed, and that's where you could see the potential for people really taking money off the table. And if we do see a significant rise in markets, that it's capped a bit because there's going to be those that are saying, hey, you know what, we're going to take our profits and move on from here. Now, we'll tell you that unless things change, and they may well happen immediately, right before this is even hot off the presses and out there, and this episode, or whether or not it's simply going to be a couple of days or weeks. I mean, there's going to be some changes that are happening with Syria, and it's going to be a fluid situation. That being the case, some of the gains that we saw because of the indecision may be taken out and at any given time. So be very careful right here. Look at individual positions as your barometer of where you want to be, and find those that have had the consistency and growth in earnings, in margins that they're being consistently held. And, those are the things you really want to play into right now. Retail probably is one of the weaker areas. We saw the spending was down, and we also saw, more importantly, that I think that incomes were also flat. Now, when you have incomes that are flat, you have spending that's down, gas prices that are higher, you have to wonder, what's going to happen? You got warnings from Walmart, you got warnings from Target, you got the outlook from many of the major players being dropped. I mean, they're not lying. Are they sandbagging? Maybe a little bit, possibly. But you know what? Walmart is not in the habit of sandbagging. They're the pulse. They're the retail number of the U.S. Now, there's different sectors, of course. You have the high-end retail, and you have the dollar stores. You have the in-betweens. Then you have the other side of retail, which you have not just the merchandise, but you also have restaurants, and you have then specialties. You have teen apparel, you have men's, you have hardware, you have tech. So you have to look at where the spending really is right now and where it's been slowing down, very simply. And right now there has been a very mixed bag when it comes to teen apparel. You saw some stocks really just fall off a cliff recently when they came out with their earnings and their outlook. We've seen that some of the home stocks like Lowe's and Home Depot really took it in the chin a bit. Seen that McDonald's is having some difficulty. Walmart, of course, the big box stores. The dollar stores, there's a couple of them out there that are interesting. We like a company called Five Below, F-I-V-E is the symbol, as a matter of fact. Five Below, it's $5 or less. So it's, you don't walk into a store with a dollar store and you get something for $3 and you kind of wonder, wait a minute, I'm in a dollar store. How? I thought it was supposed to be a dollar store. That's when I used to go into a dollar store, it was a dollar. Now it's $2.50, $3. Well, in Five Below, you're walking into a place that says, hey, you know what? We get it. It's $5 or lower. So nonetheless, it's a growing brand. It's been showing some really great returns over time. The stock chart is setting up really nicely. So these are areas that you want to, I think, pay attention to. Some of the specialty areas that are continuing to show growth, and the attention is focused on on them, and at the same time, maybe find some of the players that are bottoming out. I mean, look at JCPenney. We talked about it last week that we took a small position in it, and the reason was that basically the overhead of 39 million shares of potential selling that was going to go on if Ackman ever got out of the position, which he did last week or the week before, entirely out of the JCPenney position, has been relieved. So while there may be some players that follow along and say, you know what, Ackman's out, I'm out, and we did see some of that, at the same time, once that flushes out, and there's really nothing much more terrible that can happen to the stock aside from the fact that they're not making money, their comps are down, the question is on them whether they're going to maintain the ability to pay for their credit, et cetera, and the biggest cheerleader is out. What else could really go on right now that could really drive this down any lower? I mean, is it at a point now on JCPenney that we're seeing that, you know, finally that we've gotten the flush out here? And unless there is some significant news to the contrary, like they're not able to pay their bonds, or if they're not able to renew some kind of credit line, or if, you know, there is store closures, which may actually be a positive, or, you know, whatever it may be, is that going to really affect the price, or is it been priced in already? And has the worst condition been priced in? Now, when you look at JCPenney, for example, this is pretty much the antithesis of what I would usually look for, which is solid growth. And I would like to see that there's a potential for the company to really build on what they've had, et cetera, because really what you have is just a balance sheet that's a mess, or at least that has been a mess and is kind of getting a little cleaned up. And you have all the rest of it, all the growth ratios and all of the numbers otherwise look awful. That has some compelling trading arguments to it. Not a long-term thesis in terms of, okay, we like this stock, and this is a player that has great management and a company that really has sticking and staying power, and a place that really looks like long-term, this could be a great way to, you know, where to put my money. And I think this is just a terrific story overall. And everything checks out on every different front, from a quantitative, from a fundamental, and a technical standpoint. No, this is not that. This is really the opposite. This is a trading discussion. This is the potential for a massive short squeeze if, in fact, we do see a turnaround and maybe another player take a position in it and things settling out a little bit and the removal of all of the overhead negativity that goes along with this particular position. So that's why on Friday when JCPenney was down about 3%, we added to the position. Again, a small position and we're just kind of starting out where it was in an area again of support. Now, we talk about, you know, the support levels. We've talked about this before. You know, where do you find those support levels? Where are they exactly? And there's a variety of ways that you could do this, right? You could do it with simple things like a moving average. You could do it with more complex things like utilizing trend lines. You could use even Elliott Wave maybe. There's a lot of different things you could do. One of the things you could do is utilize some of the things that we use, which is a market profile, volume and price-based mechanism that allows us to really get insight into where the buying and selling is at any given price along a time frame. And what's important about this is right now when you look at things like volume, well, you could see where there's a spike in volume on a given day, but do you really know what price that was? Over time, you can see that, you know, over the last 3 weeks, volume has come up on a daily basis, on a 60-minute basis, on a, you know, 240-minute basis, whatever you want to look at, and you can see where the volume is playing, and you can do some calculations and maybe look at the components of where the money moved and the pricing and do some kind of calculation. We've done that already for you. And as a matter of fact, there's some webinars that are coming up. The first one that you'll be seeing is on the 6th. It's a free webinar. I want you to make sure to get on board. The entire list is at triggercharts.com. I will put a link right on the show notes of this episode where you can see all the different ones. Now, there's a limited amount of quote-unquote seating that we can actually have at that. And I know we just announced it a couple days ago. So I know we're about like 30 or 40% full already. But if you want to get that and you want to participate into some of the introduction of these different indicators and how you can use these and how they can help your trading, go over to the show notes for this episode on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I'll put a link pretty nice and big, right squarely in the middle, that if you want to attend the webinar, here are the dates and pick one of the ones. We have about five or six coming up in the month of September and October that will be at varying times during the day, some after the close, some during the market hours, and you'll be able to see basically live what's happening, and we'll give you examples and go through that and show you how these things work. A little education on what's going on there. Okay, now, let's talk also about some of the other things that are going on. I was on Frank Curzio's podcast last week, and we talked about just a whole range of items. We talked about some of the things that are going on in the markets. We talked about some of the stocks that look really interesting right now, some of the things that may be shorts and longs and how to play it, some of the economics, some of the items, Chinese numbers that are coming out. I'll make sure to put a link on that also, and I'll put that up on the site. But you need to listen to it. I think it was a pretty good show. And I thought that his opening commentary on the difference between Florida and New York in terms of people and the way people react to things, it was brilliant. I loved it. Especially being a transplant, being in Florida since 1987, but growing up in New York all that time. I thought it was a really interesting commentary that he had. Now, what's going to happen, by the way, with materials? You know, we've seen the material stocks just go through massive gyrations recently with a rotation into them, things like the aluminum and coal and, you know, anything related to materials have been just all over the place. Some of the gold miners have been moving pretty substantially, I would say, you know, 4 and 5% a day on average for the index. That's big moves. We see that they come in and they love the coal for a few days and then they hate it for a few days. They love it again and they hate it. We've been working cliffs. CLF is the symbol on that one. And we've been working that both on the short and long side. We closed our position on the short for about, I think, 7%. I think it was about 7% move to the downside, which was good. We closed it on Friday, as a matter of fact, when it started to base out a bit. And it looked like, you know, it's going through one of those turns again. And I would anticipate that over the next week that you'll see some of these materials stocks do very well, considering that we saw the PMIs or the manufacturing numbers basically move up nicely in China and in Europe. So when you see those kind of things, by the way, when you see that manufacturing is better somewhere or worse, however you want to look at it, what do you have to do? You have to think, okay, what is affected by that? Well, you have energy stocks. In materials, those are the ones that usually will be the first to move. Banking, financials, maybe. They'll definitely move along with things. That's a general market right there. Retail, not much of a play there. You look at consumer staples, consumer discretionary, maybe a little bit on the consumer staple side that there's more activity in the markets. But you got to focus in on what is going to be the play. So what you're going to find is that materials, potentially energy, some energy stocks, not those that are directly related to oil, if oil's going to maybe move down, but those material stocks, whether it's steel, whether it's coal, whether it's aluminum, you know, the raw materials, lumber related, those are the ones you want to first think about when you see that you have manufacturing and PMI start moving up, particularly in areas outside the U.S., because the consumption potential for those are enormous. And especially when you see that many of these have been just taken to the woodshed recently and these stocks have been just blasted, terribly sold off into a point that you wonder where these things are going next. But these are the kind of conditions when you see that kind of sell-off, particularly in a market that is all about buying dips, that when you see that manufacturing starts moving a little bit better or not as disappointing, that's another way to look at it, that these are the areas that you want to think about for a trade moving into. Because you're not going to find that these stocks have a good balance sheet or they're not going to have good overall consistent numbers when it comes to their EPS and their sales and their various margins and ratios. You're not going to see that. So how do you invest in those? Well, again, we've always talked about this. There's multiple ways that you want to trade from a diversification standpoint. One, Yes, you want to find those stocks that are super duper, that are going to show fantastic returns over time, that are going to be able to stand the test of time because they have great fundamentals and the technicals are right. Of course, if technicals fail, well, you got to kind of move on. But assuming that you have the fundamentals right and the technicals that are right, you're in great shape. Now, there are those also that have very poor technicals and very poor fundamentals. Those are your trading positions. Those are the ones that you'll move into when they start showing a contrary move from the direction they were moving. Find the levels that is the support and resistance and then move into it. And then once it hits either of the points on the other side from your trade, move out of it. Or if it breaks down further, again, you move out of it and find what the next level is that really is important, that will be significant, and that you could find that will be a position level that you can invest in and that it will move with you. If it doesn't, again, you move out. But you can't forget about it. What I mean by that is, so many times I've seen that there is an investor who likes a stock and he buys into it, doesn't go to the right direction. Maybe does it again, doesn't go the right direction. And then says, I'm unlucky with this. I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I can't do this. Well, that's not a good idea. What if the third time that you invested, okay, the first time you lost a couple of points, second time you lost a couple of points, third time you were right about it and it moves directionally in the way that you anticipated and you're up 12 points. Well, why do you think that you're unlucky with this? Forget that. Forget all about that. That's, hocus pocus. You continue to find areas of support or resistance and you find the odds that are in your favor that you find, okay, this has about about a $2 downturn that would be the potential where I'd have to get out, and I see an $8 upside. And if that is the ratio, that's pretty good. Potential to lose $2 to make $8, think about that. I'll take that. Now, would I do a $2 to make $2? Questionable. Why would I do something like that? 50-50, I want to find some things that are in my favor. So when you look at a chart after you've done some of the work on the other side and you see that, hey, there's an opportunity for this to move up or to move down, again, whichever direction we're looking at, and if the opportunity is that much greater on the direction that you're trading it, that works. That's something that you can invest in. So think about that next time that you're looking at a stock and you're looking at a position. Okay, what's the downside? Write it down. Okay, dollar. What's the upside? Let me look at that. Okay, $3. Well, that's a 1-to-3 ratio. 1-to-3 ratio. That's good. Now, of course, I could lose a dollar, but okay. I have a chance to make $3. Three times the amount of the loss compared to the gain that I can make compared to the loss. Three times the amount of the gain. That's good. Now, last week, I talked about a stock. It was CRM, which is the symbol for Salesforce.com. And the reason I talked about it was that they were coming out with earnings last week. And I thought that, it was interesting that there was a lot more competition in the area. There's a few different companies that were honing in on some of their ground and potentially going to take away some of their turf. And it would be interesting to watch what's going on with their earnings. And wow, they blew out earnings. I guess they're not getting any much problem or hurt or any kind of real competition from some of the other guys like Infusionsoft, Microsoft for that matter. And that was really good to see, actually. But I got to tell you something, very impressive. Very impressive when a company that has the size they have, the growth they've had, and the potential for a slowing period due to a variety of factors, inclusive of competition, can really come out and show that kind of resilience and that kind of amazing, not only quarter, but upside guidance that they provided. So very impressive. My hat's off to them. And you just got to kind of go along with the fact that they are one of the better companies in what they do for very simply for contact relationship management. And they're the number one in the industry. So I guess there's a reason why that is the case. And they can continually perform quarter by quarter. Yeah, there's been some hiccups here and there and problems there and slowdowns here and there. But again, in a time when competition is heating up, they really did an excellent job at fending it off. A couple other things. Let's see. DH Unplugged. If you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, we're having the closest to the pin contest. A lot of fun. John and I came up with the idea of figuring out, okay, how could we come up with a contest that really has a direct relationship to what we're talking about on the show on a regular basis, as well as bring people in to have them participate as well. So we did this thing called the Closest to the Pin Contest, announced it last week, where listeners will put in their best guess as to what the price of a particular stock will be in, let's say, a week later from any period. And we have some prizes and giveaways and things like that. And so far, we're getting a lot of response, to be honest with you. But if you want to participate, there is lots of information available on dhunplugged.com. Let's think. A couple of things I want to talk about. I know. Do you remember when I've talked about how when there's the reports that come out that you see that the highest level of traders are playing this commodity, or they're this short the most they've been on that commodity? Or, well, there's some news out that the gold bulls are back and they've added positions. The highest level of bullish interest in gold since January, which is pretty significant, especially after the rout that we've seen recently. And this is something that I want you to look at, because if, in fact, we do see a calming of the concerns over Syria, and if that's a lot of ifs that you have to think about here, if you do see that there is a questionable level of commitment by the Fed, you can go either way on this. And when you do see that there is this high level of commitment by traders and the commitment of traders that come out each and every week, that's something that I'd like to look at. You see also that there has been an increase of bullish wagers on, and you call it wagers, by the way, because they really are. This is, we're talking futures here, and it is more of a gamble. It's more of a, you know, much more of a speculative type of trade and transaction than you would see when it comes to stocks. You don't really see that comment, wagers, in the news when you talk about stocks, but futures you do. So we see that hedge fund wagers are the highest they've been in a while, and they've really increased significantly on this concern about Syria in oil. Now, oil's been dropping for about 3 days now on this indecision because, of course, it did ramp up very significantly on the fact that there would be some kind of intervention or any other kind of strike of some sort on Syria, and then disrupt the entire pipeline issue and then cause problems within the Middle East. And the list goes on that we've talked about. So this is something that I find very interesting that you need to keep a watch on. And you could obviously do a lot of research on the fundamentals of it and the supply demand factors of it. But I like to really just, from the outside, take a look at where are all of the wagers going. And usually you see that moving into the direction of the trade, and when the trade does turn, a lot of times it just unwinds the opposite direction very, very fast, very significantly. And that's the time that you can make some decent money. The runs usually will happen over time, but the unwinds will happen very quickly. And you have to be aware and awake to what's going on with that. The other thing I guess that we'll kind of talk about is this whole Vodafone and this M&A activity that's going on, the buybacks in the market that we've seen, the dividends, all of this is really kind of fascinating when you think about it, because there's so much activity that's happening right now. We're seeing the second largest merger that we've seen in, I think, historically, $130 billion move by Verizon to pick up the assets of Vodafone, and Vodafone shareholders are going to get, I think, $84 per share as a payout on this deal. I mean, it's really a very significant deal. The question obviously came up, where's all the money coming from? You know, how are you getting $130 billion? That's not pocket change. That's pretty much the war chest that Apple has in cash sitting around. Well, the company went to individual banks, financial institutions, and other places to find about $10 billion per, and then get that money, and then use part of that as well as a additional funding they had, and part of the deals that they wrapped it. And came up with the money to do so. I mean, a very large telecom deal, which helped the entire sector last week. And it's really kind of fascinating that this is going to hopefully unlock a lot of the potential opportunity for Verizon and for the shareholders, but for the company in terms of their income potential over time. Now, maybe a little bit of a setback initially, but still at the low cost of borrowing that they have now, this is where they're really gunning for the M&A, and that's what really is driving a lot of the M&A, is the low cost of doing any of this, of financing some of this, and finding where the money is going to come from at such low rates is really just the process because it makes so much sense to do so. And at the same time, it's the same thing with buybacks, because borrowing money in the form of bonds at low interest rates, then buying back stock in your company, if you believe in it, is a great thing. The only negative is if things turn around on you, what happens is that you get a real taste of failure, because now you have so much more stock in your own company. If things aren't going well, what happens is you got a kind of a doubling down process and you lost the bet. But this is really, you know, when we're seeing this M&A activity, that's a sign of a healthy situation, or it could be also a sign of a desperate situation. But what we're seeing now is some healthy M&A happening. We're also seeing that interest rates being as low as they are helping. So all this thing, you know, the Fed wants to keep interest rates as low as possible to make sure that they continue to provide the opportunity for this to go on, to create, at least if not, the healthy economy, a healthy market for this wealth effect, which we, again, talked about many, many times. What I think that we have to really focus in on, and that's why there's so much concern about this, is what is the Fed going to do? I do not particularly think that knocking off $10 billion a month is going to be the end of everything. There will be a reaction in the markets, but some of that's priced in already. $25 billion a month, not the end of the world. I think, frankly, you know, a much greater number would not be the end. It would be a definite downturn in markets. But at the same time, you have to consider the fact that the Fed is not only looking at the U.S., but they're looking at the rest of the world as well. And looking that you at it, and you can find that there is some bright spots, and there is the potential that China may be coming back a little bit, or at least not falling further behind. And Europe is starting to somewhat emerge from their, you know, their terrible recessionary times they've had for some time. You know, it's all a very good sign that leads to the fact that you really should be scaling back on the amount of bond purchases, because you're going to start warping things terribly. Start creating bubbles in all sorts of instruments that is problematic. Now, while the Fed doesn't want to, you know, scale back because they're trying to increase inflation, we still have a really just on the edge deflationary potential going on right now. You have to question if they're going to do it. Now, with Larry Summers potentially coming in as the next Fed chief, he's not a big proponent, not a big proponent at all about, quantitative easing and this whole process. That's going to also be weighing on markets here. But again, I think really the market is very reactionary right now, and it's going to be even more so when we look at the fact that traders are going to be back in force starting this week, and that ramp-up period of when they're going to be really back into that last quarter, which is only a month away or so, when they're looking for, you know, potential rallies or end-of-year profit-taking, is really going to start ramping up very quickly. And this is the time you really need to focus in on your portfolio. Watch for those particular stocks that are in your portfolio that are having a hard time and going against the grain of the market, or maybe dropping much more than the market is in a downturn. Look at those that are really doing very well against the market. Those stocks that are bucking the trend to the upside and are really doing very nicely when the markets move up on a daily, weekly basis. Those are the ones that are going to be very powerful moving forward. So you want to be into strength right now and really discard all of the weakness, unless there's a special situation that you can really come up with a good thesis and with downside protection. All right, that makes hopefully a lot of sense to you. And just a quick lesson on where we're going with this. And again, just to not to beat this dead horse here, but we're going to go over all of this, the support and the resistance levels and the areas that you really want to watch in these webinars that are coming up. So we'll make sure that you do get your reservation, because we will close it when we do have our limit on this, and there are limits. So otherwise, I mean, I think that we're going to have to wait and see what happens with the decision on Syria. I do hope that the Syrian government does not take this as a green light to go ahead with any further atrocities and think that they can get away with it, because that's not going to be the case. You know, the world is not going to look at that as something that is a very positive at all. And I hope that they do say, you know what, we get the hint here that, you know, you guys are serious and we're just going to, you know, back off a little bit here. And at the same time, not have any other regimes come up with the idea that they can move ahead with this because we're being soft right now. We're going to end it right there. I want to thank you very much for joining me. going to have some great guests coming up. A couple of weeks of no guests, summertime. The stocks I mentioned and all of the important links, the things that you need to pay attention to, are on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And, of course, you could always contact me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I will see you and talk to you next week. I look forward to it. In the meantime, have a happy holiday for all of our Jewish listeners for the new year that's coming up this week. A happy Rosh Hashanah. And welcome back to the year for all those that are going to be starting school down in the South. They started a couple of weeks ago, but I know up north they're starting on Tuesday. And some of them maybe Thursday. But anyway, I wish you a great week, a profitable week. Stay tuned to all the things we talk about. Follow me on Twitter, because that's where I do a lot of updates as well. And you'll find some things that you need to pay attention to is there. Thanks a lot. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.